Rance to Newman. Oh, that's a woeful kick. And here go the Pies again. Alan Dynak showing one way, showing the other. A little bit of candy. How good am I?
And welcome back to Richmond Tiger Talk.
So, Nick, the reason why I chose that particular recording to start the show, that is from round 20, 2009. So almost exactly 6 years ago, and in that game, Collingwood beat us by 93 points. Interesting parallel. And that goal was, that recording was the moment where Dynak kicked another goal and did an annoying sort of shimmy, like he'd been electrocuted, goal celebration. And to this day, I remember being very annoyed because I felt it was poor form and they were sort of really enjoying sticking it to us when we were down. So we stuck it to them when they were down.
Yes, we did. That last quarter, it's hard to overrate how much fun that was.
It was. As I said on Twitter, I didn't have to watch the game. It was over by sort of late in the third quarter. But I watched the last quarter again for the procession of very satisfying goals that it was.
I know. We've talked on this show before about, you know, the big fluctuations in Richmond's goal-kicking accuracy. And look, we've kicked the goal exceptionally well again. But, you know, even under-12s kick a pretty high percentage of uncontested goals from the goal square.
Indeed. But sort of, you know, I mean, let's not bury the lead. The tie victory, I mean, where was that from? Like, I mean, we knew he was kicked for goal, and, like, he's kicking for goals in superb form, even by his standards. But, like, he was just incredible around the ground. He was all world. Like, it was like, as I said on, again, and like I said on Twitter, it's like if Stevie Morris started kicking like Dustin Martin or playing like Trent Cotchin. Like, it's just, where did that come from? That was his 99th game. And suddenly he's just produces like, I mean, the six goals didn't surprise me, but his round the ground play was just fantastic as well.
So I actually went back to, if you remember that game at the football park, I think it was 2012, where...
How can I forget it? Because you bring it up every third podcast we do, because it was the shining example of what Ty Vickery could be and hasn't been thus far.
He would fling himself across the front of the pack to take a contested mark. And, you know, it's been the white whale of Richmond performances ever since. And yet, this week, not only did it have that strength in the marking contest against, you know, a series of decent, if not great, opponents, but the around-the-ground work, the intelligent setup play, you know, massive career high in disposals... You know, he's now kicked 24 goals, 7 on the season. He's 11th in the AFL for marks inside 50 a game. I don't know. It's a little bit overwhelming.
What I liked about it, and some of those goals in the Adelaide game, that was sort of going third man up or, you know, as you say, coming in from the side. A few times the ball was dropped on his head and... You know, a few times he took the mark in that circumstance. But my favourite thing he did maybe all game was at the end of the first quarter where the ball was dropped on his head. He was 2-on-1 and the old tie loses that contest. Someone takes a mark and it gets rebounded out. We've seen that happen so many times. Well, the new improved late 2015 version of Ty Vickery brought the ball to ground. On top of that, made the tackle, got a hold in the ball and kicked the goal. So, I mean, the next two things that happened were fantastic. But the mere fact he created the contest is such a sign of progress for me, and that him, you know, frankly, flying, you need your ruckman and your big key forwards to play like men. They need to be physically imposing, and he's starting to play like that.
I know that we've talked about having a two big forward structure versus a three big forward structure, and we've seen both work this season. But for me, this game felt like the closest we've had to a forward line with literally all the guns firing. So that, you know, Ty was playing really well, Jack was playing further up the ground, having, you know, a decent but not great game. But the whole forward line really worked as a unit, perhaps to the same level as our all-conquering back line did.
Well, we scored 150 points, so I mean, clearly it was a fantastic performance. I did like the theory on the internet that Griffith's injury was actually a stroke of luck because it forced us to change our forward line structure into something that's working much better. Admittedly, when your midfield's playing like that, everything helps. But yeah, no doubt that this particular forward line structure has worked very well the last 2 weeks. So I wanted to talk a bit, like, so now that we're sort of breaking into the tactics, well, sort of what I really liked about this game was the first quarter. And, you know, early on we kicked 4 goals from 6 inside 50s. And it wasn't a fluke. We did it again against them in the first game as well. And it was sort of modern football where you defend deep. And the Pies are sort of playing a slightly old-fashioned game where they press high and they bring all their guys in to trap the ball in the forward 50. And then we got the ball over the back and we knew that they had pressed high and we were very long and direct to get the ball over their defence. And we did it successfully multiple times where we cracked their zone. It reminded me actually of how North beat us, but It's great. I love us to see us playing that football. I think it's very tactically astute. I think it's something we haven't done in past years. And, at one stage of the game, we were up by 38 points with only 3 extra shots. And part of that was, as you said, because we were taking shots from very easy positions, like most of Lloyd's 3 goals in the first. They were all very easy shots. Joe the Goose's from over the top. It was because structurally we were setting up really well.
I know. So we've ended up winning by 91 points with 9 fewer inside 50s, which is an unusual combination, but it just reflected the speed and the quality of the ball use. Like, there was clearly a decision had been made in that first quarter that if the opportunity was there, we were going to be more aggressive going through the centre of the ground on the rebound from our defensive 50, and there was a lot of football to be rebounded from our inside 50 because, once again, Alex Rance took one of the best key forwards in the country and made him look bad. That 4-year deal is looking like outstanding value.
Not that anyone was questioning it, but I couldn't agree more. Admittedly, as I think we pointed out before the show, Travis Cloke is not in the best of form. But, you know, as has been pointed out by other people, 2 years ago, Travis Cloke was killing Rance.
Yeah.
And now, like, it's just been a complete 180 degree turnaround, and like Travis Cloke would be having nightmares about Rance. It just destroyed him. Stevie Morris, playing the back line again is eminently adequate, which is, you know, a huge improvement of what he was and is filling in well. There was before the game a suggestion that tactically we'd miss Grahams, but I thought actually Batchelor did very well as the sort of the third tall.
Well, you can't argue with the fact that Batchelor's opponent in the first half got subbed off for the second half. That's a sign he's playing pretty well. But we used him, actually both the last 2 weeks, we've used him more coming out of defence, which has been good. I actually really like Taylor Hunt's game, talking about the back line.
With a high possession count?
I just thought some... Look, he does struggle when he's disposing under a lot of pressure, and the defence did have a bit of time and space to work with. But I thought the combination of his defensive pressure, his offensive positioning, and his ball use, it was a more complete game than we've seen from him sometimes.
Nick, this is about Ellis, but I think it's true of the team as a whole. I watched the last quarter of the Essendon Suns game, partly because it was close and, you know, partly to reset because we were playing Essendon next. And there was a moment where Bunnell was running back with a flight of a ball, a high ball, and he dropped a mark and he was clearly worried about what was around him. Don't get me wrong, I'd love Bunnell to join us next year. But the thing was, Ellis twice ran back and didn't flinch and took 2 harder marks in our game. And it made me realize, watching Bunnell do that, how grateful I am that we have players who now you just expect everyone on the team to be unflinching in when they're going back with a flight of the ball in those moments where courage is required. And it's a tribute to Ellis, but you know what? It didn't actually stand out. Like, I just sort of, I can't think of anyone on this team who I wouldn't expect to go back like that.
Which I think is a reflection on the team culture as well, that if everyone else is taking their turn when it's their turn to go, you don't want to be the one squibbing it.
Yeah. So I completely agree. And so that's a nice thing about the team. Just quickly to get a negative out of the way, you know, but it's partly positive. It was impressive that we won so easily, and Jim got killed in his matchup.
I know. That was actually something that I looked in. We've been playing some pretty good football for the last couple of months, and we've done so. We've had a couple of good games, but it's been 6 weeks since Chimp actually scored a goal. And you know, he was in really good form in mid-season, but yeah, he's tailed off a little bit. But the team as a whole, and that's partly with Kane Lambert coming in and giving us that extra depth in midfield. But you know, that perennial question about how badly we play when Leeds is out, well, again, he was a really strong marking target. He kicked goals, and he had 5 clearances. Like, it's just, we just don't need Chimp to dominate in the same way that we have in recent years.
No, well, he didn't. Greenwood, his direct opponent, had 10 more possessions, maybe 11. So, yeah, he definitely didn't dominate. On the flip side of that, Ellis played on crisp for a little while, you know, not the whole game, but it definitely started on him. If you take those guys head to head, Ellis had 31 versus 18 for crisp, so that was the turnaround. But yeah, absolutely, that the what makes us win is much more diverse these days. So who else stood out to you?
Well, as you say, it was a good team effort. I thought Lloyd played one of his more consistent games. Like, I'm still not completely convinced about him in one-on-one contests. You know, when he's out in a lot of space, that does show him up for athleticism at times, but you just can't argue with that first quarter, 3 goals, and he showed off some strong marking at other times as well. It was one of the better semi-Lloyd games, I thought.
The first 4 goals of the game were actually kicked for us by guys who were playing VFL 2 years ago. Sammy Lloyd, a couple of things that stood out to me. His last quarter, I mean, he kicked all his goals in the first, but his last quarter was quite good as well.
Mm.
He read to the ball off the foot really well, better than most. There was a moment where, Marich got a shanked sort of, semi-torp off the side of his boot for a clearance. And Lloyd marked it in his hand, even though it was sort of going on a diagonal 45, which is very hard to do. It requires, you know, really good judgment to mark it, something like that going full pace. And there was a mark, I think it was his second goal, where his opponent was sort of playing off him because they were both expecting the ball to go over their heads. And the ball went a bit shorter, and Lloyd read it much quicker than his opponent and got in and took the easy mark. It was the one where he took the mark about 25 in front, directly in front. Mm. And just, you know, twice, you know, yes, you're quite right about his athleticism, but, you know, he's got some brain power. He's got some innate football, Johnny Football magic.
He's got the pure football gene.
He does.
For me, somebody probably at the other end of the spectrum, I really liked how Camden McIntosh looked this week. I think having last week being the sub, just looked like he was a bit fresher and friskier, but I thought he had a really good game.
I loved it when he took the mark in the second quarter, about 45 out in the defensive arc, and he didn't even look. He just went bang. He saw space in front of him, didn't worry what was behind him, just took off, ran straight in the middle and kicked it long to Jack. It was beautiful play, and you know, line-breaking play that helps you win football, that creates goals. Like, you know, I've said it almost every podcast, but I just think Camden McIntosh does things that wins games in modern AFL football. He's the closest thing we've had to what Leroy Jetta was in the Swans' last premiership.
Mm. I like he's such a big physical presence around contests.
And yeah.
So there's the potential that he gets better at it as well. He had his first 2 seasons were pretty injury interrupted, so this is his first real crack at you know, a full season of on an AFL list. So I think there's quite a bit of improvement to go there.
Yeah, absolutely. But you know, he's already a key player.
Mm. Oh, yeah. I thought Shane Edwards did what we needed him to do in his return. And Dimera, I think in press conference today, said he played about 70% game time, which is what they wanted. He looked fine.
Yeah, I thought he did look slightly off the pace.
Yeah.
I thought he did look like he'll be better next week.
Yeah, I thought so. I like Dusty's game. I was mildly surprised he got as much love as he did from the coaches' votes.
Yeah, well, he got 32, I suppose. So, you know, if you look down the stat sheet, the simple stat sheet, it looks impressive. But he's just been in supreme form. In the coaches' votes, he's our best player. And there's a little bit of daylight second. We talk it every week, but I just think he's in fantastic form.
Yeah, it's funny. It's because we've seen, you know, the fully operational Death Star version of Dusty, then when he's a bit off that and he's just very good, you know, you don't quite get as excited about it as when you have a couple of those one-out forward 50 contests where he dominates his man.
Well, he got one on the... He did get a nice... It was late in the game, so it didn't really matter. But, yeah, he did get one nice goal where he outbodied someone. Quickly, Nick, Kane Lambert was a bit down in output, but still kicked a goal and was very high in his pressure axe, 26, which is sort of... You know, that's about as much as any Richmond player gets in any game. So, yeah.
I liked his work. I liked the way he got around the ground, even if he didn't get as much ball. It was just a very solid team effort. Miles had 7 clearances. You know, we had 152 marks for the game. So, you know, the Hawks lead the AFL in marks and they average around 100. So that was a mammoth sign of how much we were in control of the play, although.
Interesting. I'm now more worried about Grundy in future. I think he's going to give us trouble in years to come. But our second leading tap getter was Grigg, who had 4 taps to advantage, going second man up. So interesting use of.
We have been doing second man up a bit more.
Yeah,
that was all I wanted to talk about from the game. Anyone else for you?
Yeah. Well, there's a couple of things. They're not really. I think we've highlighted everything important for the game. I just thought on the. Just quickly on the interaction with the Collingwood cheer squad. I'm going to be a grumpy old man here. I don't like it. I don't like it when Tomahawk did it a couple of years ago. I didn't like it when Goods did it. Richo was okay with it because he's Richo. But, you know, I don't think players... I'm sure what the Collingwood cheer squad was saying was deeply offensive on all levels to any right human being. But... I don't like it when players so obviously react to the cheer squad because they've paid 500,000 to a million or whatever they're being paid. They're elite athletes, they're good looking, and you know, look at the Collingwood cheer squad. They're sort of
Let's just assume that. You know,
I wasn't a police station today for an administrative reason, and you know they looked like some of the posters on the wall. Let's be honest. Anyway, so that was my grumpy old man. Did you have any take on that?
Look, I don't mind like the playful stuff, but yeah, it was a bit too much.
Anyway, other issue. I thought we could have brought on Lennon a bit earlier. Particularly, he played his best game of his career the week before. I didn't like that because, and this is why. This is I'll make a broader point here, and this is not so much about Lennon because we talk about the sub every week. And this is something to think about in the next 2 weeks where, you know, especially the Essendon game, we might be able to rest a couple of players. I was interested in the load that our best players have had over the season. So I looked at the sort of top 15 players based on Supercoach points. Supercoach points is sort of a good de facto for how much you contribute because it counts contested possessions in port. It rates contested possessions and other things that good players get. Of the top 15 Supercoach point getters amongst the team, how many of the top contending teams players have played all 20 games? So of Richmond's top 15 players by that measure, 10 of them have played 20 games this year. Fremantle, it's 8. Hawks, it's 3. West Coast, it's 7. Western Bulldogs, it's 2. North Melbourne, it's 7. And is there anyone else in the top 8? Oh, no, the Swans are 5. So basically, it's 10. We have had the most players, of our good players, we've had the most play every game this year. So I wouldn't mind if we brought in a bit of rotation. It's also something to keep in mind at the end of the year when we assess the year and sort of look at, you know, injuries and other things. Just one to keep in mind. I'm not saying definitively that this is an issue, but I just thought I was interested by that.
Yeah, I reckon we'll see, if assuming Saturday goes well, I think we'll see a bit of player management. It is, we have got a core of players in sort of that mid-20s age group where they, you know, they've had the benefit of a few pre-seasons to get used to the physical work, but they're also, like the Hawks, you know, it's a much older playing group, so they are having to nurse them through the season. But it is a good point. We've had, you know, we've had Rance and Lids miss a few games and Sheds miss 5, but other than that, sort of, there's that second tier have been very consistent. But then the third tier of sort of our fringe players, we've had a lot of injuries there. So, yeah, it's been a funny old season.
It has. Just the final point I'd make on this is that if you're looking for two players who might need a rest, four of Jack's last 5 games, he's been below his season average for disposals. And 6 of the last 7 games, Cochin's had, he's been below his season average for disposals. Not massively below, but they're definitely not playing well as well right now as they were at the start of the year. Don't want to overplay it, but just one to point out.
I was reassured by Jack kicking a goal from outside 50. That for me is a sign that he's moving pretty well and he hasn't got any groin issues.
I don't quite know if there's something wrong with Jack, because he's also taking screamers. But he's also, like, I chose disposals, but his goal average is down as well. So his goals and disposals are down over the last 5 games. So anyway. Okay. Other things are going on, Nick, worth touching on. Do you want to? Yaron's been discussed a lot, and I was having a chat with someone after the game, as you know, one tends to do. They call up friends and loved ones who also barrack for Richmond to discuss Richmond after a big win. And so, just an interesting chat we had after the game, and you know, after last week's podcast, is you can now sort of you can make the case more and more that, you know, that this is the current core of the Richmond team does have the potential to go all the way. It doesn't mean that they will, but you know, that there is, if everything goes right, it will. And for everything to go, but I think it's, you know, you'd have to say that if you're being honest with yourself, the chances are less than 50%. So you need an aberrant result. So that encourages you in the off season to maybe think about players who are boom and bust, which makes me more sympathetic to your argument that maybe we should think about Yaron.
Well, I've looked at Yaron quite a bit over the last 4 years, and he is a very inconsistent player. And he's been reasonably durable, but he has had a few soft tissue injuries. His performance is a bit up and down. He's not a great player. Like, I think it would be unrealistic to expect that he'd come in and have an impact of a guy like Ibi. But he would be a good player. Like, I think he would come in and, if he's playing well, he'd be, you know, I think he could give us, say, a similar level of production to somebody like Dusty, and that's useful. And that would be a good thing, and that would be more than we could expect with our second round draft pick for at least a couple of years. So,
did you say Dusty?
No, Vossi.
Vossi, oh, fair enough. And one thing that our friend, he's a friend of the podcast and a listener, pointed out was, you know, the one idiot theory.
yes.
That, you know, that what your team can always sort of, like, Yaron, you know, he's been dropped a lot. He's obviously a bit of a personality to manage. And, you know, most teams can handle one or two of those types. You know, the first Swans premiership team famously had Nick Davis, so, you know, you know, difficult personalities. And now that Dusty's sort of a reformed good citizen, we don't have an idiot on our team anymore. So we could probably accommodate someone who's a bit boom or bust.
Well, no, and it seems like a pretty strong on-field culture. And yeah, I like the idea of him on the half back line, but also, you know, that he could swing to half forward and be dangerous as well. We don't. That's a bit of X factor we don't have. That sort of positional versatility. It's pretty much lids or nothing at the moment.
Yeah. So Nick, there was one other issue before we get to VFL and Essendon, which shouldn't take long. I wanted to ask you about in the lead up to the Essendon game. There's been a few rumours about Essendon looking at Dimmer, and you know, you can very superficially see the appeal of that, because one thing, Dimmer's obviously done a good job rebuilding the club and is also, you know, I think it's safe to say that, and hopefully it'll never be proven wrong, he's extremely high character coach. Like, his reputation is spotless, and he's instilled a really good atmosphere and culture at the club. What do you think about this rumour?
Look, I come back to, if I'm Dimmer, what's in it for him? You know, then there's some sentimental attachment to the Bombers, but, you know, it's one of, he was a junior at North Melbourne, he played at Essendon for, I think it was about 5 or 6 years, then was at Port Adelaide, was involved in the Premiership, then at Hawthorn, now at Richmond. You know, that, I don't think the sentimental attachment plays a part, and honestly, they passed him over for a senior job. The only reason it makes sense for him is if they offer him a 5-year, $4 million contract. That's the only conceivable scenario. And since they're already paying a substantial amount to people not to coach them next season, I just can't see how that makes sense for them compared to, you know, he's got one more year left on his Richmond deal. And during this off-season, I wouldn't be surprised at all if we, you know, assuming the finals aren't a complete disaster, that we, a suitable extension to that deal was announced.
I agree with everything you've said. And yeah, it's just remarkable that the sort of Essendon still has this cachet that the rumour even gets credence. I would also make the point that Dimmer hasn't won a final yet, and as much as we all love him now, in 3 weeks' time, this could be a completely different discussion. You know, I think it is both within the very much in the realms of possibility that we win a flag this year and that we go one and done in the finals. Like, these are both things that could conceivably happen.
I know. We'll talk about it more next week, but it is a extremely even finals series. Like, we can still play quite a number of teams in the finals.
And is live, we finished top four. And just quickly, Nick, you know, I tweeted this out. Winning 3 games in a row to make the title match and then win the title match, it is possible. It is done all the time in the NFL. And, the reason why it's probably happened so much in the AFL that's been won by a couple of teams is because there's been a couple of dominant teams every year. But, you know, we've beaten everyone who's in the top four, if not this year, last year, fairly comfortably. I had to use the Dimmer cliche, no limits. Anyway, VFL, Nick?
So, look, we are at the dog end of the season for the VFL, and the highlights have to almost begin and end with my boy McBean kicking 5 goals in a team that got beaten badly. He was very much a sole contributor. And a couple of other interesting ones. Dan Butler, who's missed almost the whole season with a knee injury, he's starting to work himself into some fitness. He had 14 disposals, 4 tackles and a couple of goals playing up forward. You know, I think he need to perform at a level better than that to start to get into senior contention. But it's nice to see him having an impact at the VFL. And look, Chris Knight's played reasonably well. I don't think it's enough to get him into senior selection. And you know, some encouraging form from big Rhys McKenzie and even a little bit from Ivan Soldo.
Hmm. I think they missed Matt Thomas. I think they're losing your...
I think they did, yes, very much. And having... We're very big fans of Georgie Castagna on this show, but sadly he's gone from 33 disposals last week to 8 this week. So, he's still a teenager in his first year at the VFL.
Hmm. I want to see McBean this Saturday. I think, you know, you've got to play these guys if you've got them, and he is in good form. And I think the any development he's going to get out of the VFL season is done. And now, yeah, it'd be great if we saw him against Essendon. Speaking of which.
Mm. So they've had the season from hell.
Yep.
They were competitive against bottom three team last week. That's the nicest you can say about them.
Yeah, they scored a bit more, which they haven't been. So that was
no, that's true. They've been one of the most inept attacking teams in the AFL. Like that, you know, they've had been reasonable at the amount of ball they win, but yeah, it's been a pop gun forward line. Bizarrely enough, it was a near best on ground performance from Sean McKernan on the weekend. 24 disposals, 9 marks, 26 hitouts, 3 goals. That's a monster effort.
It was from a player who was delisted last year. The other one who was interesting was Nick O'Brien, who 2 weeks ago got 21 possessions against the GWS and for some reason got dropped. Played well, you know, got almost 40 touches in the VFL, came back in and got almost 30 in the AFL this week. So he's a funny kid.
Yeah, he's generated a bit of controversy, actually, as to why he hasn't got more of a go. We know the broad parameters of the Essendon team, we know. Like, it's a strong key position group. Hurley's, amidst the chaos, Hurley's probably had his best season. Carlisle's attracted a lot of attention. Hooker is a pretty good player, but I think it also shows how much people talk about, you know, the potential for Essendon to rebuild, but really I think you build around midfields these days in AFL, and Essendon are still relying on the same guys they always have.
Yeah. One of whom they suffer terribly both this year and last year when he's not playing and he's old. I'm referring to Watson. So, at the end of the game, the Gold Coast game, the camera shot to a long shot, and every single Essendon player was lying on the ground exhausted. They've had their post-coaching sacking big effort. I mean, in Sala, like, I just cannot see a scenario where Essendon win this.
I know, look, we do always say this, like, Monday is the most confident day of the week, but it would be extremely surprising and profoundly disappointing for us to lose this week.
Yeah, and look, and frankly, one of the key things now, like, I think if we lose, you'd have to have a key injury late, and that's the sort of the thing now. It's coming business end of the season. A lot of it's going to now come down to who gets injuries and who doesn't. So it'll be interesting to see.
Yeah, look, it's hard not to start looking towards final scenarios. I am.
Plotting the days. I was actually just making plans, as you know, with some mutual friends the week before grand final, and I moved. I suggested, well, the Sunday's free because, you know, the week before grand final days are all games are always played on the Saturday, the Saturday and the Saturday night. So yeah. I'm starting to do some long-term planning.
I'm Nick.
I'm Andy.
My Richmond Tiger Talk.
I used to love the roar of the crowd.
Magnificent mark taken by Walcott there. A fight kick is being entertained. He gets inside, well inside. Get anywhere that you bring the